Hello and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and this afternoon we're kind of picking up. We had a little bit of technical difficulties this morning, so we had to push it back till we got some things done. Trying to make this podcast work. Sometimes it can be a little bit troublesome, cause us a little bit of trouble, problems. But we are continuing this afternoon in our study in the book of Genesis. So last week, we had Genesis chapter 18, and we saw, of course, God and two angels who come and visit Abraham, and we heard the promise again, of course, that Abraham would have a son, and the further confirmation that it would be a year from that time that this child was going to be born, that God would come again at that time, and he would be have a son. And then, of course, we know that God and these two angels get up and they leave, and Abraham followed after them, realizing that they were going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham pleaded with God on account of God's own righteousness, to not destroy the city if there were any righteous there. And they, had this long discussion back and forth. Well, if there's this many, will you not? No, I won't. Well, if there's this many, will you not? Abraham continues to pray and to beg and to plead until he feels like he has asked God as much as he can of him. And we got into the fact that, Abraham had, by this point, had started to develop and the faithful heart that God wants to see in his servants, a love and a desire for souls to be saved, not to spend an eternity in hell. And chapter 19 brings us to the precipice of what began in chapter 18, in that these two angels are going to go to Sodom and Gomorrah, and we're going to meet up with a character that we haven't seen in quite some time. If you remember correctly, and Abraham left from the land of Ur and ended up in Haran I may be getting that wrong. It was Hebron or Haran. I just went blank. Sorry, guys. That he ends up with his father. He waits on his father to die, right? God told him to leave his family, leave his father's house, go to a land he would show him. He spends 7 years at Hebron or Haran. You can correct me later. I just went blank on it. Starts with an H, okay? The northwestern direction of Ur. I can see it in my mind. The name's not with me. And then, after that 7 years had passed and his father died, he then goes to the land. God comes to him again, says, "Come on, let's go, let's get this together." And he ends up still taking a family member with him, a certain nephew who you will all recall by the name of Lot. Well, last time we saw Lot was quite some time ago. It's been, probably about 10 years, probably a little bit longer actually than 10 years since Abraham and Lot have, or Lot has been in this storyline, okay? He's been gone for quite some time. Remember, they come out of Egypt, and their servants are fighting amongst each other about their master's flocks. And so Abraham said, "Look, you pick a direction you want to go in, and I'll go the opposite way, and that'll take care of this issue." And if you remember, even that far back, it said that Lot had pitched his tent towards Sodom, meaning that he had gone in the direction of near to Sodom and Gomorrah. And so all this time has passed, 10 to 15 years, give or take a little bit, okay? And now Lot is in the city of Sodom, and these angels are going there to destroy it. And that's where we are in chapter 19. It says, "And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, 'Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early, and go on your ways.' And they said, 'Nay, but we will abide in the street all night.' And he pressed upon them greatly. And they turned in unto him and entered into his house, and he made them a feast. and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. So, what we get introduced to a lot of very important details here at the beginning of chapter 19. So, first of all, we know the two angels from earlier have come into Sodom, and they're coming in at even, meaning it's late afternoon, getting close to time, it'd be dark. For here, where we are in Arkansas, when I get a chance in the afternoons, I'll go out and do a little bit of fishing at even, which is kind of around 5:30, 6 o'clock-ish to the time the sun goes down, about 7:30. So somewhere in this ballpark where the sun's setting, it's getting close to dark, these two angels enter into the city of Sodom. And while they are coming in, it says Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. I believe we've kind of gone over this detail before, but just in case we haven't, or you're new listening, or you're new listening to the recording later, the idea, the concept of the gate of a city is that that was where the judicial processes were carried out. That's a very fancy way to say that's where they held court. That's where they had hearings. That's where they had trials, these kinds of things. And so we know that because it says Lot sat in the gate, that he, by this point, since we last saw him, has not only moved into the city of Sodom, excuse me, but he is also some form of an official. We're not really told, you know, what his exact title is. Sometimes in these cities, there would be one sole ruler, kind of like a mayor or governor type thing. Sometimes in these cities, there would be a council. Even today in the United States, here in the small town that we're in, there is both a city council and a mayor of the town, okay? So there's both. So he's some sort of a ruling official, enough so that he is there hearing trials or hearing town gossip, going conducting some form of business. This is where all these things would be done. And he sees these two angels, who he perceives at this point just to be noble men, righteous men, probably somebody of great stature, okay? And it says, Lot seeing them rose up to meet them. So as soon as he sees them, he knows there's something different about these two. And he may have been somewhat motivated by the potential for personal gain. It may have even been that he recognized that these two individuals were good and righteous men. He definitely did not understand that he was looking at angels at this particular moment. He's going to learn that, but at this moment he doesn't know that. It said that he saw two men. That's what he says. He calls them my lords. So he either thinks they're someone of importance or possibly someone who is definitely in the wrong place in his mind. And so he rises up, meet him, and he bowed himself towards the ground. And he said, behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and you shall rise up early, and go on your ways. So, very interesting. Even though Lot has been removed from Abraham for all this time, he still is trying to carry out a little bit of common decency, okay? And what I mean by that is that he's following the code of hospitality for a stranger. He meets these two men, it's getting close to nighttime, and he invites them to his home to feed them, let them get cleaned up, and rest for the night, okay? And this was typical in this day and time. It was expected. You just saw that earlier in chapter 18 when Abraham saw the three men from afar who ended up being, you know, God and a physical manifestation, and then, of course, the two angels. He ran out to meet them and brought them into his tent to take care of them, to feed them these things. And so he stretches this hospitality to him. Now, in this day and time, whether or not the hospitality was carried out was based on whether or not it was accepted, okay? It wasn't a kind of thing where you were expected to offer and the person that you offered to was expected to take it, okay? It was definitely a situation of if you were in need of it, you know, they were supposed to offer, but you were free to kind of give it whether or not, kind of give, have a little slack there as the person who is the recipient of the hospitality. And so the angels do something that probably shocked Lot completely. They says, "Nay, but we will abide in the street all night." They say, "No, no, no. We don't want to put you out. We appreciate it. We'll find us a spot over here on the road and lay down with our cloaks, sleep the night, and then go about our business for the, tomorrow, for the rest of the day." And now for us, that sounds completely ludicrous, because if you go somewhere, even in today's time, many people won't even sleep in their car, right? You're like, "Oh no, that's dangerous. You're exposed. There's windows. People could, walk up on you," this kind of thing. In this day and time, it was not abnormal, unusual to sleep in an open environment, even in the middle of the street. When you were traveling or doing something of that nature, or of course, if you were poor or homeless, that kind of thing. And so they say, "No, we appreciate your offer, but we're going to stay in the street all night." Now, there is something that happens here that begins to make this, why I said this is interesting, makes this unusual. And it's what happens in verse 3. It says, "And he pressed upon them greatly." So Lot doesn't just offer them hospitality and they say, "No, we're fine, thanks." He continues to push. And the idea of him pushing greatly is that he's almost just grabbing them and taking them to his house. And many people, when you get to this, they're like, "Oh, well, he thought, maybe they're royalty or something like that." I, when I was going through seminary, I was taught, that this was more of a, he thought there may be some benefit to getting them in the house. They looked like they were noble, looked like they were of a higher class of people, this kind of thing. And after going through this story, many, many moons later from seminary, I don't think that's at all what's going on here. I think Lot realized that these two guys are new in town. Sodom is a place full of horrible immorality. And I know I haven't addressed that yet. We're going to address it when we get later in the story, because the story is going to reveal to you what the city of Sodom was really like, what the inhabitants were like, what the people were like. But he presses upon them greatly because he knows about the city he lives in. Here where we are in Arkansas, even in the town that we're located in, where I pastor at, the city that my wife and I actually met and got married in, Little Rock, not too far from us on the eastern side, we have Memphis about an hour or 2 hours away. When you look at cities like that, those are places that we also would tell people, "Now, make sure that you're home before dark." Why? Because bad things happen. People are robbing, people are killing, people are stealing, people are, raping, things of this nature. Nothing good happens after dark in these places, okay? First time I moved to Little Rock, that was the first thing I was told. After 9 o'clock, you better be at home, because if you're not at home, something bad may happen to you. And it's definitely not a far-fetched statement. So here we are, we're at even, right? We're about to start getting into nighttime. Lot offers this hospitality. They say, "No, we're good." And he continues to push. And he pushes. He's like, no, seriously, come with me. No, come on. No, really, let's go. My house is this way." He continues to pull and pull and pull, because he knows what the people of the city are like. What's so sad about this story, guys, is that Lot is not an idiot to what he's gotten himself into. He's not naive. He's not ignorant. He's not in any way, shape, or form fooled and thinks that he just lives in this great city. He loved the sin of Sodom, but he also knew the dangers that came with it. And he pulls these two angels into his house, right? It says, finally it says, "And they turned in unto him and entered into his house. And he made them a feast and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat." So he finally, all of his urging, they go, "Okay, we'll come with you." And he takes them home and he does all these things, feeds them all this. And then this is where our story starts to get pretty rough. It says, "But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter." Sun goes down, it's nighttime, he's fed them, he's taken care of them. More than likely, knowing Lot, he already knew what would happen if these two men were caught out at night. He brings them to his house. He urges them, "You have to come with me. My wife just makes the best cake." You know, if you ever go to the South, that Southern hospitality that people try to put on you. No. Where they're asking, but they're not really asking. There's an expectation there. Lot performs this knowing what can happen to these two men. He gets them in, feeds them, everything's great. Everybody's getting ready to turn the lights off and go to bed. And I know in Lot's mind, he's like, "Whew, we took care of that. Nothing's going to happen to these two guys. I've been hospitable. Nobody noticed us. We're going to be fine. We're going to sleep through the night." And then all of a sudden, every single man in Sodom, old and young, and this is a city, guys, that many people speculate to have been in the tens of thousands. I've seen some that are 100,000 that say they were up in the hundreds of thousands population wise. I don't know if there's any credibility to that. I know I could definitely see tens of thousands based off of some of the ancient civilizations and cities that were existing in the same time frame as these cities. But what we're talking about here is a ton of men. Enough that they surround the house and they've come from every quarter of the city. And look at what they ask. It says, "And they called unto Lot and said unto him, Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us that we may know them." So the house is surrounded. And the men call into Lot. And of course, Lot, they probably knocked on the door, and Lot goes to the door. And they ask him, "Where are those two guys that came home with you?" Said, "Hey, you may have thought we didn't realize it, but we saw that two guys left the gate and went to your house, and they have not left yet. Where are these two guys?" And look at why they want to know where they are. He says, "We want to what? Bring them out unto us that we may know them." The King James version of the translation, anyway, of the Bible, King James, cleans this up quite a bit. It is the idea that if we were going to translate this into modern English, it's send them out so that we can rape them. That is the idea. That is what's being asked of it. These men saw these two new fish in the sea, and in their own homosexual lust and their own immorality and sin, they tell him, "Hey, send those two guys out. Well, we saw you took these two dudes home with you, but we're gonna take them for our own use." And guys, where we start running into some problems with Genesis chapter 19 is because of this topic right here, especially in this day and time of homosexuality. And now, for me, I do not understand why Christians are confused, debate, have gray areas regarding this, and this is why. Homosexuality was a sin in the Old Testament, and it was still proclaimed to be a sin in the New Testament. Many people would go, "Oh, no. There's nowhere in the New Testament that homosexuality is thrown off the books." Yes, there is. Romans chapter 1 speaks against homosexuality. Jesus Christ speaks against homosexuality in his own defense of the law. Jesus, if you remember correctly, Jesus Christ told the Pharisees, "I came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it." Meaning what? The law still exists. What was sin in the Old Testament is still sin today. The only change that happened with the death of Jesus Christ is that we are now under grace. We are not under the sacrificial system of the law. There was no, okay, well, these things were all sins in the Old Testament, and now they're not. That's not at all what happened. Homosexuality is a sin. And yes, it is a sin just like any other, like lying, murder, and all that. I know there's some you Christians that may get on here and go, that's right, lay it out there, Mr. Zach Ebarb. You tell them how it is. Friend, I'm going to let you in on something before you get gung-ho on homosexuality. Look at your own life. If you're a liar, a stealer, a gossiper, you took off confrontation in your life, you're not a good witness with your life, you don't live correctly, you're not living according to who you say that you are just as guilty as any person practicing homosexuality. For those of you that are Christians that are getting on here going, oh, no. It's an outdated patriarchal system. I challenge you, go read your Bible. It's not an outdated patriarchal system. It's not a cultural difference. It's not any of that. The Bible does not evolve with society. The Bible is the foundation for society. You don't get to change the truth of the Word of God to make you feel like a better human being in the eyes of the world. It's wrong, plain and simple. And the reason that it's wrong is because of the fact that God created one man and one woman at the beginning of time. He established the family unit on that situation. And it was a man and a woman who spend the entire time of their life together. Okay? That's the perfect system that was set up. Because once you step outside of that system, you have now erased the line on what is right and what is wrong. And that's what leads to the situation of Sodom. I'm not telling you that homosexuality was the main dish in it. What I'm telling you is that it was a slow destroying process of the family unit that now leads to a city that is so amped up with sexual lust that they think rape is okay. Two new guys come into town, no big deal. That's fresh blood you're supposed to share. That is the mindset of these men. And friends, that's what happens when sin becomes prevalent and forms that even the worst, I mean, God calls this an abomination, okay? You're getting into a special flavor of problems when you start allowing sins like this to creep in. And before you know it, the basis of morality is even gone, where these natural men don't even care about no rape's wrong, murder's wrong. They're fine with it. They say, send these men out so that we may know them. Now, this house is surrounded, right? Lot's got these two men, his two daughters, and his wife and his house and himself. They are completely surrounded. They are beyond outgunned. And now they have asked Lot to surrender these two men. And they have done it in a way that is like, hey, we know they went home with you. Why don't you send them out so that we can have our way with them, in a sense of this isn't up for debate, okay? And it says, and Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold now, I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing. For therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. Now I know many of you here, especially if you're a lady and you're on here listening and you're probably about to come unhinged. What Lot does is absolutely atrocious, but let me try to explain to you some of the basis of what he's doing. He's being a coward, don't get me wrong. This is horrible and awful that he says, look, I got two daughters who have never known a man. They're fresh fish just like these two guys. I'll give them to you if you'll leave my two guests alone. Now, let me explain to you why this is, okay? Because many people, and I agree, this is horrible. It's atrocious. He's an absolute coward. He slams the door shut. He hides behind it, and he says, hey, come on now, guys. Let's not do this. But if you're going to press the matter, I've got two daughters, and you can do whatever you want to with them. It's horrible. Absolutely horrible that Lot proposes this in this verse, but I want to kind of help you understand why this trade-off even came into his mind. And the reason for that is that in this time period of Abraham, Lot, and all of this, women typically had a much lower status in the eyes of the culture. Not that that was right, not that that's biblical. It's not even remotely biblical. It's just, it was what it was in this day and time. And so Lot, it would have been more of a dishonor for his two guests to have been used by the men of Sodom in this way than it would have been a dishonor for his two daughters to be taken advantage of. And so he's a coward. He's not going to fight this fight. He can't fight all the men of Sodom who are all surrounding the house. And it's basically in his mind, do I give him my two guests or do I give him my two daughters? Because if I don't give him either one, they're going to come in here and take all of them anyway. And so Lot makes this horrible offer. Just don't touch the two guests that I have, but I'll give you my two daughters. They have not known a man. And the reason for his mindset was these two men came into my protection. They came in understanding that there would be safety offered to them. And the men of Sodom, they said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. So Lot's closed the door, he's yelled this offer, and the men of Sodom said, nope, that's not going to work, we're going to just come in. And so they come to the door, and they begin to try to break the door open. It says, but the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut to the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. So here is Lot. He's at the door. He gives this horrific offer to give his two daughters in the place of these two men who we know are angels. Lot doesn't realize this yet. And the men say, nope, that's not going to work. You're one of our civil leaders. You're supposed to do what we want you to do. We're just going to come in the house, take all of them. How about that? And they begin to break open the door. Now, when you have these houses, you kind of had the door, which was this outer porch area, and then you would have the actual door going into the home. Lot has kind of closed off this outer area. They're getting ready to bust in. The two angels come out of the outside of the house and they rip Lot back through the doorway, and they immediately strike all of the men that are there, great and small, meaning that old and young. You saw that earlier that it said all the men of the town, old and young from every quarter had come, with blindness. And they were blind to the point that even though they could not see anything, they were so amped up with wanting to accomplish what they wanted that the idea of they wearied themselves to find the door means they literally worked themselves to the point they could no longer do anything, still trying to find how to get these two men out of the house. The people of Sodom and Gomorrah, friend, had an evil about them that hasn't even quite touched the basis of what you're seeing in the world today. I deal with a lot of church members that come up to me and say, Brother Zach, you know, we're getting close to the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. No, we're not there yet. Don't get me wrong. It's horrible. But we're not to the point that men struck blind supernaturally would continue to try to break open a door to try to rape two men. We haven't quite gotten to a point in society where rape is okay, where murder is okay. And these things were common practice in Sodom. All the men of the town gather to take part in this event because they saw these two newbies come in towards the end of the afternoon. And here these two angels step up, they strike these men with blindness, and even after doing that, they still wanted what they wanted to the point that they wearied themselves. They literally tired themselves to the point of not being able to do anymore, trying to find the door. It says in verse 12, and the men, the angels, said unto Lot, Hast thou here any besides son-in-law, and thy sons, and thy daughters, and whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it." At this point, the angels get down to the business of why they're there. They look at Lot and they say, "Is there anything else? Is there anybody else that's in this city that belongs to you that is not here? Whether it's your sons, your daughters, your son-in-laws, your wife, whoever it is, gather them up because we are going to destroy this city." Now, here's what's beautiful about chapter 19. For those of you that weren't here last week for chapter 18, or will be listening to the recording, maybe missed last week, you'll remember that Abraham had the discussion with God towards the end of chapter 18 of if God found at least so many righteous in Sodom, he would not destroy the city. And they kind of go back and forth. If you find 50, will you not? God says, no, I won't destroy it if there's 50 righteous in the city. Well, if there's 45 in the city, God, how about that? Will you destroy it then? No, I won't destroy it then. Well, what about 40? No, Abraham, if there's 40 righteous, I won't destroy it. Well, what about 30? And we get all the way down to 10 by the end of this discussion. And Abraham gives up at 10. Now, from that basis, we know, of course, that God's still going to destroy the city because there were not 10 righteous people there. But God still answers Abraham's prayer because he sends these two angels to get Lot and his family. These angels come in and they say, "Lot, you get anybody else that belongs to you because we will destroy this city. It's going to burn to the ground." And immediately it says, "And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law." They're not actually married to his daughters yet. Remember earlier it just said they've not known a man when he was trying to make his bargain with the men of Sodom, okay? These were men who were going through the engagement process to his daughters. He goes and he speaks to them, which married his daughters, and said, "Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, "Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city." Lot immediately leaves that night. He goes, finds all of his sons-in-law, the two that he would have. And he tells them, "Look, there's two angels at my house. They just smote the men of Sodom with blindness. God's going to destroy the city. We need to get out." And Lot has failed to be a witness of the one true God to a point that these boys think he's joking. They hear him talking and they're like, "Whoo, oh Lot. He's probably, Lord only knows what he's been doing tonight. He'd come down here to the house, knocked on the door, has this crazy story about how God's going to destroy this place, and there's two angels at his house, and oh boy, man, he's going to be a weird father-in-law to have," and they just send him on his way. Lot, in the 10 years since we've seen him, give or take a few, the last time that we saw him and Abraham interact, didn't just pitch his tent towards Sodom, he became part of Sodom in his worldly pursuits. And now at a time where his witness, his testimony, his reputation and character could have saved the lives of two people, he has to go deal with the fact that he has failed to live the way he's supposed to the point these two guys are going to die because they think he's just playing around with them. That he's just crazy. Guys, this is the sad thing about people who are God's children today, is that we've taken God and we've compartmentalized God, all right? We've taken God and Sunday, Wednesday, I will put the God stamp across my forehead, and I will go to church, and I'll shake hands, and I'll talk to the pastor, blah, 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 blah. I'll sit through the 45-minute to hour-long spiel that he's going to give, and then when you get home, you've left all of that at the door, and you go do what you want to do. And I'm going to tell you something, friends. As long as God's people continue to leave their souls, leave morality, leave a proper living at the doors of the church building, they're going to keep sending people to hell. We have an entire world out here of opportunity to witness to other people, but we destroy it with the way we choose to live our lives. And Lot had all this time to witness to these two men. He had all this time to have those conversations. He had all this time to be living the life he should have been living to begin with. But instead, he wanted to be out in the world. And to be out in the world, you can't talk about God because the world doesn't want to hear that. He didn't get to be the civil leader of Sodom by talking about God and how great he is and what his expectations are. He got to be the leader of Sodom by going with the flow. And he went with the flow to a point it will cost the lives of an entire city. And the only people that are going to get out of there are him and his two daughters, because even his witness before his wife was so atrocious that she'd rather stayed in Sodom and died than to live with him and follow God. He goes to these two sons-in-law, they don't hear him, and then of course the next morning he's gone back to sleep. Why he did that, Lord only knows. He's just not desiring, apparently, to not get killed. And they tell him to arise, it's time to go. It says, and they said, For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-laws. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him. And they brought him forth and set him without the city. They tell Lot, get up, get it in gear. It's about to happen. We've got things to do. And look at what Lot's doing. He's still lingering. He doesn't want to leave his possessions. He doesn't want to leave what he has. The literal reason for why he's in this situation, the sins and the worldly desires that have put him in this situation, he still doesn't want to let go of, even if it will cost him his life. In fact, it says there that God, being merciful, told the angels to do what? Grab them and drag them. Luckily for us, friends, thankfully, we have a God in heaven, a Father in heaven, who cares enough that sometimes, even though you can't get your act together, he will make you get your act together one way or another. They literally drag them outside of the city so that they do not get killed in what is about to take place. And then it says, and it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot said unto them, O, not so, my lord. Behold, now thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast shewed unto me in saving my life. And I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold now, this city is near to flee unto, and is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said unto him, see, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou be come thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities, and all the plain, and all the inhabitants of the cities, and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. The angels tell him, look, head straight for that mountain and get out of here. And Lot said, there is no way I'm going to be able to get to that mountain in time. There's a small city over here. We may perish in that mountain. We may die. An animal may attack us, whatever. Can we go there? And the angel said, I don't care where you go. Get moving, because I cannot do my job until you leave. And as soon as the sun is up, it is early morning, they enter into the city of Zoar. All of the fire and brimstone from heaven begins to fall. The cities of Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed in a way that the world has never seen. It was to be similar to that of a volcanic eruption. All of this fire, all of this hail falls down from heaven onto the city. And notice that the angel had specifically commanded them to not look back. They said, do not look back, continue to go forward. And in the later on in that verses, they're in, getting ready to enter into Zoar. It says that Lot's wife did what? She looked back and became a pillar of salt. Now, there is some debate as to what exactly this means. The gist of the fact is that she had no faith. She desired to stay in the city. She longed for what they had. And she turned and lingered, is the idea, meaning that she fell way behind. She stopped running altogether and watched the destruction take place and got caught up in it herself. Some say that she literally turned into a pillar of salt. Some say that the heat and the fire from everything that was coming down out of the city is what caused her body to turn to salt on an immediate basis, that it had the potential, the amount of heat that would have been required and would have happened with this circumstance would have immediately caused that to happen to her body. Doesn't matter. The point is this. She couldn't let go of the world, and it cost her her life. Lot had lived this atrocious life, that the day comes where the sins for this city are going to be answered for. And his testimony was so bad that his sons-in-law don't listen to him. He had misled his wife for so long that she desired the world more than she desired her own life, and it resulted in her death. Guys, when God's people don't live the way they're supposed to, it doesn't just harm the people we're supposed to be witnessing to out in the world. It doesn't just bring about tragedy and problems and awful occurrences for when we fail to do what is right in witnessing to others. But it will also end up in the middle of your family when you're not living correctly. We have parents and things all the time that they'll, I just don't understand why my kid does X, Y, Z in church. We bring them to church on Sunday. And the immediate thing that I will always say to that parent is, do you live the way you expect them to live at home? And trust me, they do not like it when I ask that question. But that's the problem, beloved. We live in this day and time where God's people, even people who are supposed to be parents who should know better, who should definitely not have had children, at least until they knew better, have this expectation that their children do what they say, not as they do. Friend, you cannot live the way that you want to live and tell your children to do something completely different. You can't live the way you want to live as the leader of your household, men, fathers, husbands, and expect your wife to do something different. You are the living, breathing example of what the expectation is. And I promise you, if you don't show that, if you're not doing that, you're not going to get the outcome in the lives of your family members that you want to see, because they are going to live based on what they see in you. Lot's decisions don't just cost him the witness before the world that he should have had, but they even cost him his own wife. And it doesn't get any better from here. Look at what happens next. It says, and Lot said unto them, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going back on you a little bit. Should have highlighted all this beforehand. There we go. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him. So God kind of gives you this piece that Abraham gets up that day, he sees the destruction, but that God answered his prayer in saving Lot and his family. And that Abraham was aware of that, that God made him aware that this had happened. And we know that they had gone to this city of Zoar. And for all of some reason, very quickly after they had arrived there, it says that they went up out of Zoar where? And dwelt in the mountain. They end up going right where the angel had told them to go before. We don't know why they want to leave Zoar. We don't know if the people maybe of Zoar wanted them to leave in this day and time for the only survivors to come out of a city that was just destroyed by a divine phenomenon. I'm sure all the inhabitants of Zoar weren't exactly keen on having those three there. They probably believed they were the reason it happened to begin with. And so they send them on their way. They end up in the mountain where they were supposed to go to begin with. It says, and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar. And he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. And the firstborn said unto the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him that we may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also, and go thou in and lie with him, that we may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger arose and lay with him. And he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father, and the firstborn bare a son, and called his name Moab. The same is the father of the Moabites unto this day. And the younger, she also bare a son, and called his name Ben-Ammi, for the same is the father of the children of Ammon unto this day. Lot's lack of living for God didn't just result in losing his testimony before the world, and seeing the destruction of thousands of people. Lot's unwillingness to live the life that he was supposed to have did not just cost him his wife, who had become so caught up in materialism and the sins of the world that she wasn't willing to leave it behind, even if it meant dying. It also cost him this abomination with his daughters. Lot comes into this cave. They have lost everything, essentially speaking. They have nothing more to show for. It was all destroyed. And his two daughters, who are also caught up in the world and are only worried about the worldly way of doing things, decide that there's no way that they can possibly come back from the situation they're in. They are two women that no man would want. Because in this day and time, a dowry was expected. A father who had a daughter felt like he was cursed because he had to pay to get her wedded. And he was trying to wed her off to somebody who had a lot of money. That's just how it worked in this day and time. It's not right. It's not correct. It's not biblical either, by the way. It's just how the people of that culture were. And these two daughters, thinking that that's the only way the world works, they've seen it with their own father. They heard their own father willing to throw them under the bus to save his two guests just two nights before. Say, there's no way we would ever get a husband now, but we have to raise up an heir to our father. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to get him so drunk that he doesn't know who we are or who he is or what's going on. And I'll go into him the first night and you'll go in the second night. And Lot, did he learn anything? No. They bring him wine. He drinks himself to the point that he does not know anything. Some say this was because of the grief of his wife. Friend, doesn't excuse sin. Doesn't matter whether he was grieved, bitter, mad, doesn't matter. There's no excuse for sin. And him still not being worried about being the example he should be, still worried about himself, still caught up in his own selfish ways, indulges himself this way, and then commits these two abominations with his daughters that become two of the biggest thorns in the side of Israel, and two nations that will bring in gods that are just absolutely atrocious. Ashtaroth and Baal and Molech, gods that the worship for had some of the most heinous things that you could ever imagine occur as a form of worship for them. Lot's failure to live the life he knew he was supposed to live cost him his testimony before the world, cost him his family because he let the world have them, and was even going to cost the future of his descendants. Friends, do not underestimate the power and the consequences that come with sin. You may think it's no big deal. You may think it's something small. You may think it's not a big deal to watch an inappropriate movie from time to time. You may not think it's a big deal to listen to inappropriate music from time to time. You may not think it's a big deal to drop a profanity from time to time. You may not think it's a big deal to lose your temper from time to time. You may not think it's a big deal at the moment that you allow sin to creep in. But I'm here to tell you, it only took 10 years for Lot to be at this place. It only took one little sin of getting close to where the bad stuff was happening for him to end up living in the middle of it. Sin doesn't just want part of you. It wants all of you. And once it has all of you, its goal is always to destroy you. As you're going about your week, I want you to try some things for me, okay? Because I always end you guys with an application. Yeah, we want you to study. We want you to ask the right questions. We want you to be able to unveil the Bible. That's the whole point of this podcast. But I also kind of preach at you a little bit. I'm a pastor, so you're not going to dodge that bullet, okay? Sorry. There's some application here. Number one. As you're going about your week, your weekend, especially coming up here, make time for God. So what in the world do you mean by that? I mean, if you're somebody, and I know you get busy, I'm a full-time pastor, full-time father, full-time husband, okay, I know things can get very sticky very quickly, okay? You have to determine within your heart that God is the priority. Put God at the forefront of everything that you do. If your time with your family is to unwind with something on the TV or a movie, guess what? You can find something that's either appropriate or has to do with God. Works great for everybody. My wife's personal favorite is VeggieTales. Go for it. I'm fine with it. Make God the priority in everything that you do. Number two, start living what you say you believe. Do not tell people that you believe in God. Do not tell your children that you believe and serve God. Don't tell your family you believe and serve God. Show them that you believe and serve God. So let's stop talking about being a child of God. Let's just start showing people that we're a child of God. Because I got news for you, friend. When you start doing the right thing in your life, that's going to catch the attention of people way before you coming in and saying, yeah, I go to church here and I love the Lord and I was saved at this age. They do not believe a bit of anything coming out of your mouth if the life doesn't line up with what you're saying. Let's put God at the priority. Let's start living what we're supposed to be living. And finally, study your Bible. This is a very controversial chapter of Genesis because God's people have made it controversial. There are so many Christians today that are starting to see in gray what is clearly in black and white. Homosexuality is a sin. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There's no debate about it. Many people will say, oh no, 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 Brother Zach. New Testament, There's nowhere in the New Testament that's talked about. Yes, there is. Romans chapter 1, Paul shuts that boat down very early on because it was a problem in Rome. Jesus Christ himself told the disciples that when he came, he did not come to destroy the law of Moses, but to fulfill it, meaning that what was sin in the Old Testament is still sin now. There's no question about that. The expectation of wrong and right never shifted with the birth, with the death of Jesus Christ. All that shifted was where your faith was placed. They were looking forward in faith to Jesus Christ coming, and that's how they were saved in the Old Testament. You look back on the completed work. That's the only thing that changed with Jesus Christ coming. You're now under grace instead of under Levitical law. Okay? Stop seeing in gray. Study your Bible. Be real about what you see there. There's going to be times that you're going through the Word of God. You're going to find a pill that's hard to swallow. And guess what? You as a child of God have to be willing to do that, because the longer God's people continue to ignore what they know is right, the more tragedies like what happens in Genesis chapter 19 you're going to see throughout this world, that you can plainly see just by stepping outside and looking across your street, of broken homes, broken families, lives given over to drugs and alcohol, people who have loved ones in jail for murder or theft or rape or stealing, any of these things. Guys, I can go 10 feet outside my door right now and find you a family that has been destroyed by sin, because somebody failed to do what was right. And so that is Genesis chapter 19. It's good to have some new listeners on with us today. For those of you that will listen to the recording later, it's good to have you guys as well. I hope all of you have an excellent weekend. Praying for all of you. Love all of you. If you need anything, you can comment on here. Ask any questions. Some of you have found me on Facebook. You can do that too. Pretty easy. I think I'm the only Zach Ebarb in the world. I may be wrong. but you message me there. Talk with me. I'd like to hear from some of you from time to time. I hope all of you have an excellent, wonderful weekend. Get outside and enjoy some time with your families. And then, of course, be at church bright and early on Sunday morning to support your pastors in the pulpits. Learn more about what God has for you. And as always, you guys get out of here and go study.